going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thanks so much, Capital. And this is a gold medal edition of the Going Deep podcast. Only medalists allowed. We got rarefied air, and three individuals in very different forms and fashion will be heading to the Paris Olympics this upcoming summer. It's crazy to even think that. And they are hoping to get on a podium. And for our first guest, they're hoping to get back on a podium. And that would be Andre DeGrasse, six-time Canadian Olympic medalist, which is wild. And he has still room to add more to that trophy case. And he's actually adding things to your bookcase. He has a new book that came out this fall, actually came out October 17th, called Ignite, Unlock the Hidden Potential Within. It's almost like a how-to book from one of the greatest athletes on our planet on how he approaches things. Real insightful and introspective, some practical lessons that he's learned along the way in his life that he's applied to his endeavors on the track as an Olympian, a world champion, but also as a philanthropist. And the side of him I love because I relate, because we have kids that are a similar age, as a family man. And I don't relate because he is one of the fastest humans alive, and I certainly am not. But I do really appreciate that if you saw the two of us in a space, you wouldn't really know the difference. Low-key, it's crazy he does what he does at a similar size to me, but he's been able to push the limit on what he can do with his physical body and what might be even possible in the sport, especially coming out of Canada. So I was able to get a preview copy of his book and pick up some of the inspirational stories and lessons about his determination, his resilience, his perseverance along the way, and some helpful advice. And so I thought it was only right to share that with you. So that is the genesis of my conversation with Olympic track athlete and now author, although he had a children's book before, but big person book author, Andre DeGrasse. Let's go deep. Congrats. Whenever I see you, I'm congratulating you on something else. Now,
appreciate that.
It's a book. You're an author. What's that feel like?
Oh, I mean, to be honest, it's the feeling is like overwhelming, because when I first got approached about this opportunity to write a book, I was like, no way, like why me, right? But you know, just hearing from like my supporters, you know, my family, my friends, they're always like, you know, you have a great story to tell, you know, you should really do this, you know, like take it seriously and, you know, write a book and try to just, you know, give something motivational to your fans and to anybody that wants, you know, I guess life lessons on, you know, my career on and off the track, because, you know, they find me so intriguing, I guess, in a way. So at first I was like, no. But after a while, just getting used to it, you know, just writing and like, you know, teaming up obviously with an author on it, Dan Robson, great guy. You know, we put something together and I was like, you know, I'm liking it. You know, did the first few chapters. I said, okay, you know, this is something that we can get into. And we ended up writing like 30 chapters in the book about, you know, just my career on and off the track, my life, what I've learned throughout it. And, you know, now it just kind of feels good to, you know, get it on pen and paper and, you know, get a book out there, you know, so my fans can read it.
My question is, why now? Your story is not done.
I know, right?
In France, I'm sure you're hoping to come home with 3 medals.
Yeah.
Why did you decide this was the right moment to tell your story?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, just opportunity, you know, and the opportunity presented itself. I said, you know, let's do it. Of course, you know, like you said, yeah, Paris is coming up and I thought this would be a good time to just kind of like, you know, show my fans here. I'm going into my third Olympic Games and, here's what I kind of learned in my first two games. So yeah, I mean, I thought this is the perfect time to read it, you know, for Canadians coming out, especially coming out of the pandemic, kind of just give them, you know, a little motivation, in that sense. So yeah, I mean, of course, you know, I have, you know, probably so much more to tell in the story. Definitely probably want to, you know, write a memoir when I'm done and, you know, have a, you know, biography, documentary, all those things, you know, on the rise. But I said, hey, let's give a little taste and see how people take it and how people react to it. And, you know, if it's something that, you know, that goes well, then yeah, I mean, of course, you know, there's always more to the story to tell in the next book.
Yeah. So publishers and documentary filmmakers line up, because there's still some more Andre stories to come. You talk about the lessons from the Olympic Games, but the lessons in the book go way back to childhood.
Yeah.
If you knew back then what you knew now, what would you want to tell that young kid? What are some of those lessons that were,
I mean, it's just so, it's hard because there's so much to tell, right? You know, like as a kid, you're learning, you're going through the motions and you're just trying to figure it out, right? And obviously I think it's good that, you know, it's good to make mistakes and, you know, you want to, you know, as a kid, by me going through all those things that I've gone through, I'm able to now tell my story now in a sense to say, hey, here's some of the things that I went through. And, you know, if I can help another kid and kind of navigate them, of course, everyone's going to have their own path and their own, you know, they're going to go through their ups and downs, but I'm just trying to let them know that, hey, you know, this is how I kind of navigated it and how I kind of went through the process of it and how, yeah, basically like how, you know, you can get better in a sense. So, of course, everyone has to go through their, you know, their trials and tribulations. And I kind of want to just kind of just share my story about that a bit in my childhood and, you know, show what, how my upbringing was and all the people that kind of supported me along the way and got me to where I am today.
I love that the lessons aren't just about being a successful athlete, but about being a successful dad, a successful family man. Why was that part of your story something you wanted to share?
Yeah, I think for me, I want to show the full me. I want to show the fullest me and not just the athlete. I think people can relate to that a bit more because, you know, like yourself, you know, you're a father. And like, yeah, I just wanted to show that, hey, you know, I'm a dad, you know, I'm an author, you know, I'm a philanthropist, like all the things that kind of made me successful to be the athlete I am today. That's what I wanted to kind of show about myself. So I think that was like the key to say, hey, you know, you can relate to me. I'm relatable. I'm authentic. And, you know, now you can kind of just kind of hear my story a bit and say, hey, you know, this is, oh, this guy, you know, Andre DeGrasse, he's a great guy. You know, he's humble. He has great character. And, you know, that's something that they can kind of take inspiration and motivation from.
We don't have many glowing examples of Black Canadian men being so out there with how much family comes first, which is one of the names of the chapters. Do you hear how important that representation is from other people?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. All the time, you know, especially when I come back to Canada. You know, I was even at the soccer game last night. Just incredible atmosphere, of course, you know, just being able to be there and, you know, people calling my name and just, you know, showing how much of like an inspiration I am to them. So, of course, like my family, my support system, everybody kind of plays a key role in, of kind of just guiding me towards the person I am today and being successful. Like if you would have said that, you know, my first Olympics or even the last Olympics, you know, now to now, you know, winning 6 Olympic medals, I don't think that would have been possible without them. So of course, you know, just having their having their support with my upbringing, it just really just, you know, drove the key to success for me. You know, it just helped me in so many different ways, from a mental, an emotional, physical standpoint. So it definitely takes a team all the time. You know, I tell people, like, you can't do this on your own. You need that support from your family. And I think just having them in my corner all the way, it just, you know, it just drives me to be the best version of myself.
Putting together a manual, it's almost a TED Talk in words, of what people can do to follow you. But you're also putting together a manual for your kids.
Yeah.
When they're much older, to read your story. Did you think about that legacy in the process?
I mean, I think I did for my kids' book, my children's book, you know, just because, like, in a sense, you know, as a parent, you're always reading to your kids, you know, bedtime stories. And, you know, when I first came out with my children's book, Race With Me, I was like, yeah, like, you know, this is something that, you know, they can read as they get older and, like, appreciate it. But, you know, I never thought of it like that, I guess, for this book. But definitely, I guess, as they get older, you know, and they get into their teenage years, because I feel like, you know, this book is like, you know, it's for people of all ages. But, you know, I think, you know, as you get into the teenage years, you can start to read it more and start to understand it more. So I guess when they get to that age, yeah, I can see myself, you know, they might read it. But you never know, because, you know, as a parent, you know, they just think of me as dad, you know, they're like, who are you, right? So, like, you know, they don't think of me as, like, the rest of the world. So who knows what they would think. But definitely I feel like my legacy, I want to leave a positive, you know, a message for them, and, you know, try to just lead them to be good leaders as they get older. So, yeah, I mean, definitely I can see that.
Your mother's hopes and dreams for you come through in the book. Are they similar to the hopes and dreams you have for your kids? Do you find yourself thinking some of the same things your mom did with you, with them?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, for sure, because I know how much sacrifices my mom has made for me over the years, and I feel like I'm definitely going to do the same thing. I think, like, you know, whether that's in sport or just supporting them, even if they don't even want to, even, like, I told people all the time, like, even if they don't even want to do track and field, like, doesn't matter to me. Like, I'm going to support them, whatever they want to do, whatever their dreams take them. So, definitely, I mean, you know, I find myself even now as, you know, they're five, when my daughter's 5 years old, I'm making sacrifices already, you know, like, she, you know, she wants to go do this activity, do that activity. And I got to figure out ways of how to, like, navigate it all and say, okay, like, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to make it there. Because I know, like, for example, like, she had gymnastics and she's like, Daddy, I really want you to come. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna figure out a way to, like, how I can, like, schedule my thing so I can be there for her at her gymnastics. So I find myself doing that even now. So definitely as they get older and they want to accomplish more of their dreams, yeah, I'm gonna be making sacrifices all the way, right? So
is that tough? Because as a professional athlete, your window of success is so short. You've extended it, but, and also the margins between victory and defeat are so small. Is that difficult to figure out how to manage it all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, all the time. I mean, you know, the schedule gets hectic sometimes, but I think I just, like, I breathe, you know, I breathe through it all. I think meditation and just trying to figure out, okay, what's important? What can I do first? What comes second? And of course, my kids always come first. So whatever that scenario is, I just try to figure it out the best way I can so that I'm there for them. At all times. But yeah, I mean, all the time. that's a sacrifice thing. So, but my mom taught me that very well. She's like, you know, I made so many sacrifices for you as a kid, and now as you get into more of adulthood and as a grown man, you're gonna realize the same thing with your kids.
You mentioned meditation, something that culturally not necessarily accustomed to. Parents working two or three jobs weren't meditating. Where did that practice come for you, and how did you implement it into your game?
Yeah, I think I just having a good support system around me, talking to others, you know, other mentors, you know, for myself, I've realized, you know, in pressure situations, there's a lot of them, right? On the track, off the track. And, you know, I just learned that, hey, just breathe, you know, sometimes you just gotta just take a deep breath and just let it go. And sometimes that can calm down the stress, and it can really just be a game changer for me. So I've learned to do that. That's on the track, whether that's, like, right before I get into the starting blocks, I'm taking a deep breath and just letting it all come to me and clear my mind. Or if I'm being a parent or just going through my daily life, you know, and sometimes, you know, it can get hectic and you just got to just take a breather, 1 to 2 minutes, and then get back right into it. So it's helped me a lot. And I think I talk about in the book a lot of lessons of things that have helped me in that sense to cope and things like that. So I think that's one of the things that I've gone fond of, just meditating and just trying to, you know, get through the daily life of Andre DeGrasse.
Well, like you, I have two youths that I'm chasing, not as quickly as you are, but the book helped me a lot as well. I know it's going to help a lot of people. So congrats and thank you.
Yeah, man, appreciate it.
Thanks so much to Andre, and you can get his book wherever you get books, quite frankly. It's brought to you by HarperCollins Canada. Shout out also to former colleague, current friend, Dan Robson, who wrote it alongside Andre. Any project that Dan tackles is a bit of a beast and is also really, really strong. So make sure you give this one a read. Our next guest doesn't have a book yet, but certainly is the author of a real exciting story that is maybe at the climax, but maybe not, because he's got his sights set on the Olympics next summer. He goes into them as a world champion. That's right. Pierce Lepage, who has been pushing and pushing and knocking at the door for a while. And now we as Canadians can say that the two best athletes, because the winner of the decathlon for me is the best athlete in the world, the two best athletes in the world are Canadian. That is now Pierce and the defending Olympic champion, Damian Warner, also friend of this very podcast. His story is one that we've known because Damian has had such great longevity. He's been in the spotlight for such a long time. But because of, at times, injury and at times lack of opportunity, we're just starting to learn Pierce's story. So I'm excited for you to learn more about him, a real eclectic, thoughtful guy. I actually spent some time with him recently on a shoot for Lincoln Navigators. We are part of a spot that airs on Sportsnet and City, where he is in a Lincoln Navigator, and we are talking about the sanctuary, not just of a great ride in a beautiful vehicle, but the sanctuary and life and his busy life and how he gets away from the trials and tribulations of being a track athlete. Well, I want to unpack, what are some of those things that you do when you get away from track, and what has your ascension been like? That is the conversation coming up on Going Deep with the world champion of the decathlon. World champion, gold medalist. When you are introed now, it's a little heavy off the top, but has it sunk in yet? Does it feel and sound right or weird? What has this experience been like for you?
Well, it definitely sounds better than world silver medalist, that's for sure. Yeah. So I like that upgrade. It feels pretty good. But I think it's like sunk in. I feel like it obviously feels good to be world champion stuff, but it just feels, I feel like I've kind of processed the entire year. Cause when I think of worlds, or someone actually asked me, my training partner, Georgia, she was like when you look at the medal, what do you see, or what do you think? And I guess for me, I think of like the event, like I think of pole vault, I'll think of the javelin, I'll think of running the 1500, I'll think of all the training I put in throughout the year, all the training camps, the good, the bad. So yeah, no, it just feels, it feels good. It's like a nice token for, you know, all the hard work I put in this year.
We talked about the silver medalist, moniker beforehand, and you've for so long been someone who's mentioned as an honorable mention and, you know, someone who we should look at in the future, or someone who's really coming along. And now you're here. When did you internally look at yourself as someone who, if you continue to do what you did and stay on your process, could be the best in the world? When did that inner belief happen for you?
I think the very first moment of when I thought I could like compete with the big boys was when I first scored 8,000 points. This was like 2016 in France. And it was my first like international meet. And it was all against all these guys who just came off the Olympics. And I was like nervous and like, what the heck is this? I was just a kid who played video games, occasionally did track. And next thing you know, I'm competing with all these Olympians. And I did well. And I thought to myself, like, I can be with these people. Like, I'm no different than them. I can do that. And then obviously, training, I knew I always had the potential to like put up a big score. It just that, I kind of got injury ridden and was dealing with this and dealing with that, where I would go into Dex, you know, in 2020 or 2021 or 2019, I would go in being like, how can I like get through the decathlon? How can I manage this injury so I can finish the decathlon? Where last year it was a little bit the same story, but a lot better. But this year I was almost like, surprised, like shocked that I was like, wait, I'm not trying to get through this decathlon. I'm trying to win this decathlon. I'm here. It's like, what am I going to do to win. What am I going to do to put up my best performance? And that was a new feeling to me, and it paid off. And I think just being healthy has really like elevated my game. I always felt like I was there. I was just needing the health.
So let's walk through the World Championships, because you go in projecting what you might do in the individual events and how, you know, the other competitors that are vying for medals, you know, what their scores might look like. As you went through, you know, off the first day and continuing, when did you feel like, okay, I've put myself in position, and now based off the scores I put up, I just need to kind of bring it home and land the plane?
Yeah, I feel like, so the first couple events, so long jump and, well, 100 meter and long jump happened, and I was like, ooh, that wasn't as good as I wanted. And I remember my coach, my physio, they're like, wake up, like, take some caffeine pills. Like, you, like, to me, I felt fine, but I guess at least they noticed I was a little bit flat. Then, you know, reorganized, had a good shot, but and that was the end of session one. But even then I was like, holy, what is going on? Because the German Leo jumped like 8 meters through 17 meters. I was like, who is this guy? And then, yeah, then high jump happens. I think for me, high jump was like the big thing, because like I was dealing with injuries. I'd always go to high jump being like, I'm going to put the bar 2 meters. I'm going to jump one time. And that was it. Where this time it's like, I was jumping high jump. I was doing what I, you know, I was actually performing in the event, and I jumped 208, which is like the first, it's probably the highest I've jumped since like 2019. And usually like, I feel like I give up so many points doing that. And it's nice to be like, wait, I'm like back to where I was, and I had a good 400. And then I remember thinking to myself after day one, I think I told Damien and his team, and we were all just talking. I was like, some guy jumped 8 meters and threw 17 meters, and I'm 30 points behind him. Like, that's pretty good. You know, I'm right in the race. So, and I woke up on day two, and, you know, the rest is kind of history. I feel like I battled every event in day two, and everything went pretty well. And I think after pole vault, I kind of realized that as long as I don't, like, explode, I should have this in the bag. And, yeah, I guess the rest is history.
What's that like to have Damien there to compete with him? And you've trained with him, but also you are competing against him. What's that dynamic like when you both essentially want the same thing?
You know, at the end of the day, we're friends. Like, obviously, we are trying to win, but I feel like we're both super supportive of each other. You know, I want him to be at his best. I'm sure he wants me to be at his best. Throughout the years, it was a little different because obviously I was less of a threat, so it was a little more like super supportive. And we're still super supportive, but he's just some guy, someone who's led by example for the past couple of years. And when you're young and just doing international competitions, to have someone who's like on your team, he's there with you, with your team, you're all working together, you can kind of see how he operates in the decathlon. You can kind of take what you need, take what you don't need, you know? And he's someone who's led by example, and I've definitely learned from him that way in a competitive aspect. And now, yeah, we're both up there at the top, so it was really nice to share the podium with him.
It's super nice for Canadians to see us dominate on this side, you know, of the decathlon. And even, you know, when you look at, you know, the multi-sport events, when you look at the heptathlon, you know, Georgia has had arguably the best ever NCAA career and was an Olympian. What is it about us up here that allows us to be, you know, so good, you know, in track specifically, but in, you know, the multi sport competitions?
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't know if it's just the cold weather or something is going on here, but we are like a multi event nation. You know, we had not just Damien, we have so many decathletes that do it. We had Brian Tyson Eden, we have Jessica Zelenka, I have no idea what's in the water or what's in the food or the culture, but for some reason we're really good at doing a lot of events.
Love to see it. Love the fact that you're continuing that legacy and that history. In talking to other Olympians, when they have that breakthrough moment and they win gold, and maybe because I spend so much time on my phone, I always want to know, what's it like when you pick up that phone afterwards and it blows up or it just shuts down from all the messages? But for someone in a multi-sport event, like, you could be getting messages throughout because people are tracking how well you're doing and what place you are and what you need to do moving forward. What was that like for you? Do you try to shut that out? Do you consume it? Was it overwhelming at the end?
I feel feel like I'm like, because I play a lot of video games, and I'm ready. I feel like I'm already terminally online, so I'm pretty good with dealing with comments and stuff like that. But it's definitely a unique experience to be like in the middle of an event, and let's say you did really well, to be people to see on your phone, like, holy crap, look at Pierce or Damien or Georgia, look how good they're doing. Or if you're doing bad, they're like, stay with it, you know? Like, it's just so much support. So it's kind of nice where in between like sessions, you if you you know, for me, I like to, you know, whoever's around, like talk to my parents or whoever, and they can give me support. I can tell them how it's going or how I'm feeling, which is so unique compared to other events. You can't just stop in the middle of shot put or discus or the 100 and be like, yo, mom, I'm doing well. So yeah, then after day one, same thing. But in terms of fan support, it's always like a overwhelming feeling for me. I still remember in Tokyo after the day after day one, I got like so many messages. It's hard to put into words like what I guess receiving support from the entire nation feels like. It just you just feel proud, I guess, to be Canadian. You feel like pretty connected.
Someone you've had support from for a long time is your longtime coach, Gregory Portnoy. Take me through your relationship with him and your relationship with the sport. How do you end up in, the sport of decathlon in the first place?
Yeah, I feel like at this point, Greg's like my second dad, and we definitely have like that son father relationship where you kind of just can say whatever you want to your parents, and they're just like they say whatever you want to you, so it's kind of like that. But no, I was like a young kid doing you do like volleyball, basketball, you have your track and field day, and I remember doing triple jump, and I did it at like the local meet, and I broke some area record. And my dad, he was in a meeting. He was just, talking about me, bragging about his kid. And my coach's former athlete, who was a triple jumper, was in that meeting. And I was around grade 7 at the time. And he was like, "What? He does triple jump? I want to meet your kid and see him and blah 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 blah." And so I meet Kevin, that's his name, and he coached me in triple jump for 2 years, like grade 7, grade 8. And it was like coaching, it was like I'll show up like once a week, twice a week, and I was like, yeah, that's fine, like that's what it is to be a track athlete, sure. And then at the end of grade 8, he was like, I want you to train with Greg, my current coach. And my Greg is like a old Eastern European man, very traditional, and he calls me, he's like, you're too young, I don't want to coach you. That was it. And I was like, oh, okay. So I did like the sensible thing as a kid, and I quit all sports and played video games throughout high school until I got a call in, I think it was the end of grade 11. He called me and was like, you're old enough, get to the track, like come over, come here. So I started training with him, and I was doing triple jump, and one day he's like, do you want to do octathlon, which is like 8 events instead of 10? It's like a beginner decathlon. And I was like, sure, like how bad could it be? Whatever. I did pretty well in that. And then that was the last time I did triple jump. I haven't done it since. And I haven't even like practiced it. I still miss it, but guess decathlon's not so bad.
I have so many questions. One, did he have like a note in his calendar to be like, on this day, hit up Pierce because he's old enough? Like, how did that happen?
I know, right? On his 17th birthday. Call Pierce. He probably put that in his calendar like 6 years before. I have no idea, but just how it happened. And then I feel like he's always been someone who like pushed me, believed in me. I feel like he was more invested, motivated, and tracked than I was. And I feel like I really needed that when I was a kid because, I was a kid. I was lazy. I wanted to do other things. No one wants to leave school early to go to the track, to train for 3 hours, to bus home, to spend your whole day doing it like 4 times a week. And he really pushed for me to do that, and without him, I feel like I wouldn't have even been able to have success internationally at all. So, really grateful for him for that.
The other question I need clarity on is, what would your triple jump game be like right now if you had to do it cold? Because it looks easy, but the level of coordination that you need is like much more than a TikTok dance. Like it's difficult. What would you be like now if you had to just do it cold?
I'm a triple jumper at heart. I know if I stepped on the runway, did some triple jump, I would be, I don't want to say best in Canada, but you know it is prideful about triple jump.
Yeah, maybe we can see if you can double medal at the Paris Olympics. Well, I want to talk about Paris because that's where the mind goes. For the country, looking forward, for you, is there time to enjoy what you just did? Is there time to remove yourself? Or is it immediately X minus days from the Paris Olympics event starting?
I feel like the big competition is always in the back of your mind, no matter what. Even at the start of the season, it's always like worlds, worlds, worlds. But no, I feel like taking my time, I'm going to reset, do what we've done, you know, kind of the same thing we've been doing that has worked this year, worked the year before, and kind of start from scratch and build up and set our goals and set our plans. But yeah, I think for me, it was just being healthy. And I'm really looking forward to this year, especially because the past 2 years I've had to do rehab for like 3 months of like zero running anything. So now I get like a real base season. I can run. So I'm expecting to be faster and stronger this year.
You talk about that success, and that's, you know, where I want to end this on, is because people see the finished product and the medal around your neck and, you know, all the partnerships and fanfare that come with it, and maybe lose the journey that it took to get there, because the success for you wasn't necessarily linear. What would you want people to know and learn from your story, whether they're aspiring track athletes, aspiring athletes, or just, you know, people who want to better themselves in their life? What's the one thing from your journey that you'd want them to understand?
Yeah, I think this doesn't necessarily apply to me and all track athletes. I feel like people will look at, especially, let's just, you know, the Olympics. They think the Olympics is, that's it. And we don't do anything for 4 years. There's just the Olympics, that's it. Then track people go do whatever. There's just so much work that track athletes do, and not just track athletes, just amateur sport athletes do every day that doesn't get noticed. The ups and downs, the lack of funding, the traveling, all of it that goes into it, the physio and just all your teams, your support. I feel like a lot of that sometimes gets unnoticed by people who just show up every 4 years and watches the Olympics or Worlds. And just know that I guess there's a lot of effort that goes behind the athletes, and I guess for athletes, just this, you know, keep with it. Just because something bad has happened or your year didn't go perfectly doesn't mean it can't improve. You can't improve. You know, I remember when I was going through my knee issues, I was like, I'm just gonna have to deal with this thing for the rest of my life. But, you know, here I am, the knees are good, and I'm where I want to be. You just gotta keep pushing, trusting the people around you. You know, I think if I didn't have full trust in my coach, my physio, I don't think I'd be here where I am today. And just trust your support structures and keep at it.
Well, I love for you that work and that trust, the investment that you put in, you've been able to see full return on that investment thus far. So excited for you, and looking forward to watching to see what you do next, and looking forward to, you know, covering it and talking to you about it. Thank you so much for this, man. Congrats.
Yeah, thanks. And I got one more thing. On top of all that, I am a big fan of, you know, like, enjoy things outside of your sport too. You know, I have hobbies. I have friends. I like to go do other things. Your sport isn't you. It doesn't define you. You can, I guess I'm a decathlete, but you know, I'm a really big nerd. I love board games. I love escape rooms. I like doing those things. I'm more nervous to go in an escape room than I am to run a 400 meters. So, you know, enjoy it all, you know, live in the moment.
Thank you so much to Pierce for finding some sanctuary, not just in a Lincoln Navigator, but with me on this very podcast. After the break, someone who is driving success as an administrator after he's done it as both a father and a player. That would be Rowan Barrett. That's next on Going Deep.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is the show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had the show. Thank you.
Thank you, Grandma and Granddad. Their names are Clifton and Lucille. Their grandchild's name is Rowan. That would be my son. And it is a name that he shares with a couple of Black Canadians who have done some big things. Now, one would be RJ, Rowan Jr., but there was a Rowan that made noise as a basketball player before the current New York Knickerbocker, and that would be the pride of St. John's University, Rowan Barrett, who now is the leader of our national team as GM for Canada Basketball. He has us not only ranked higher than we have been in the last two decades. He has us going back to the Olympics, first time since he was there as an athlete alongside Steve Nash. Well, no one is alongside him now. He is the sole general manager. After starting as the assistant GM, working in the youth ranks, he brought us a world championship at the junior level with gold. Well, now he's brought us a world championship with the senior level with a silver in beating the United States. And now, hopefully beating everybody this summer in the Olympics. But who will be on the team? What was it like to put this team together, especially knowing that if they didn't perform, everyone would be coming for his neck? And he put his neck out to bring along Jordy Fernandez as the head coach at the last minute. What was behind that decision? We go deep on all things Canada basketball and him earning respect for our country and himself. Rowan Barrett, what's up next?
Congratulations. Mission one, Olympics accomplished. Mission two, a medal accomplished. What's it feel like for you now knowing the work that's gone in for years?
Mm-hmm. It feels great. I think that there's a clear validation that, you know, our operations, our style of play, our system, that all of those things work, you know, at the highest level of play. The current number one, two, and three teams in the world, you know, we beat them this summer. And so, you know, I think on your way towards getting to the destination, there have to be indications along the way, right? One, because you don't want to lose momentum. Two, you want to make sure that the people that are with you are always believing. And, you know, you need to have moments where you push through. And so, you know, last summer beating Argentina for the first time in decades, right, as a number five team in the world, indication, you know. 11-1 in the qualifying, number one record in the world, another indication. Number one offense in the world through the qualifications, another indication, right? And so now you come into the World Cup. Let's see where we are. And, you know, we get on the podium, we get a medal. Absolutely. I think it speaks to the strength of what we're doing and building and all the efforts of the people that it takes to make it here, from our president, CEO, Michael Bartlett, you know, to all the staff that helps to put things together before we ever get to the court. And then obviously to Jordy Fernandez and the players, you know, and our board, right, who's decided to take a path, you know, not traveled by many in terms of risk and everything else. But, you know, thankfully we're able to pay it back with performance. So, you know, feeling really good, you know, about where we are. But, you know, you always got that weight, you know, that's there, understanding, you know, what's coming and that we got to be ready.
Did you feel like... Let me turn this thing. Sorry. Let me double check. I'm not sure if it's really...
We all thought it was one of us, so it's you.
I'm sure it's... Okay. Did you feel like it was a validation or affirmation of you as the leader of the program? Because if things go south, mm-hmm. you're the person who people are going after.
Yeah, I mean, quite often, you know, the focus should really never be somehow on me when the team does well, because in the end, the players win these games. You know, like when I was playing, we weren't thinking about who was in the office or who was doing whatever. Like the ball's in my hand, like we're going to win or lose the game. And so I do love that the focus is on them. However, when you do lose, yes, that's generally when you'll see my name mentioned. But that's a part of the job. Right, it's a part of taking the job. And so I guess, yeah, if you're now winning, and I am a part of this team and leading this group, then yeah, my name's going to get mentioned there as well. But I mean, it's not necessarily something I chase, right? I've been in front of cameras since I was in high school. It's not something generally I chase, but it comes along with it. I think that yes, when you get a job to do, people are going to want to know whether or not you can get it done. And I think, you know, in 2012, you know, I started in this with Steve Nash. I know I started as assistant GM at the time, and I had kind of control over the youth programming, and Steve obviously had the final decisions at the senior level. And so at the youth levels, we started in 2012, and we won the World Cup for the first time in our history in 2017. And then in 2019, I took over as the GM here, making the final calls. And in 2023, we're sitting on the podium here at the World Cup, and we're on our way to the Olympics. So am I happy? I don't know that when you're in my role, that's necessarily a word that you think about. Do you feel validated? You know, I always feel like there's more work to be done here. We have not ultimately achieved what we want. And so my focus is on that. And, you know, at the end, I'll let whoever wants to judge me however they want to do that. But internally, I know what I'm driving for and what my focus is.
Well, you weren't around this country when it went down this summer to be receiving the conversation. So I'll bring you into the conversation in the barbershop, a space where you're not in as much anymore. Mm-hmm. But there was a feeling, credit's going around. Mm-hmm. Steve Nash getting credit. Nick Nurse getting credit. Glenn Grunwald getting credit. Mm-hmm. All no longer a part of the program. Mm-hmm. Where's Rowan's credit, who is still a part of the program? Do you hear that? Do you feel that?
You know what? If I'm going to be honest, like, I was with that team, and that's all I could see. I don't read. I'm not reading, you know, what's being written or what's being said. I'm trying to focus on making sure we win, you know? And sometimes reading too much of that stuff, it can get into your mind, and it can start to alter how you see things, right? And nothing is going to give me better information about what's going on than what I'm watching and the conversations I'm having with the players and the coaches and all that. So I try to keep my focus there. I haven't been in the city for a little bit because I've been out. But I would just say this. I would say that when you get to this point where we are and going into the Olympics now, nobody's doing that by themselves. And all the names you've mentioned, everyone has helped push this thing, you know, up the hill, right? They've each pushed it a little bit further up the hill, a little bit further up the hill. And now, yeah, like, you know, as we've pushed through, you know, I am the one that's here, you know, at the head of this. And, you know, I think what's important for me, what's good, is that I think that they're, much like when I was playing, you know, I was really focused on players, you know, young, maybe athletes looking and saying, hey, you know what? Wow. You know, like, they're at the Olympics, they're doing this, I want to do that one day, you know. And so for me, probably what's important is, yeah, you know, that somebody maybe that's, you know, gone as far as they can in athletics, right, or somebody that just has always had this love, that maybe they can look, you know, at somebody born in Scarborough, right around the corner, you know, has been able to come in here and help to do the job to push the, you know, the country a little bit up the hill as well. And if that inspires some people to think, you know what, hey, well, you know, maybe I can do that too, then I think that's a great thing.
You know, Deion Sanders recently was talking about the fact that some of his haters, because when people see a black man in a powerful position, it's threatening. I look at you and your role, and one of the reasons why it's important is because it's legacy making. Mm-hmm. In the CEBL, so many of your former national team players, mm-hmm, that look like you are running teams, some with the exact same title that you hold, mm-hmm, with Canada basketball. How big is that a part of the legacy that you're trying to create?
I think it's great, you know, and if I'm going to be real, when I started it, I wasn't thinking that, you know. When I started in this, I was in the corporate world, right? I was doing that. My desire started from a very different place. Right. It was one, I was tired of my former teammates overseas from all these different countries. Man, you guys couldn't get one win, you know, at the World Cup, man. You let this team, you get Lebanon beat. You got, like, I got tired of hearing that, right? Like, countries trampling all over our flag. And I just decided, am I going to sit on the sidelines and complain? Or am I going to try to get involved and try to help change this thing. And that honestly was my first motivation, like, enough, you know, like, let's go, man. And the other part was, you know, I've known for quite some time that there were always players, really good ones, that just somehow slipped through the cracks, you know, that didn't make it. They were young, they were coming along, they were looking real good, and then something happened somewhere along the way, and they never quite got all the way to the national team, never got all the way to the pros. There was always something there. Though at the time that I started, there were more of us getting through, which was great, but I still could see, you know, the stories that just didn't make it. And I thought, I would love to go in and help those kids, you know, to make it, right? Like, shore up some of those holes so these guys don't fall and help them along their way. And those were my motivations coming in. It's turned into something very different. I started in youth development, you know, at first, 2010, I would help Canada Basketball and youth development just to help these kids, you know, to try to steer them in the right path. And it's turned into something different. And obviously when you win, you know, rising tide, you know, kind of lifts everything and everyone. And so if that is a legacy that comes from this, that I can see, you know, guys like Jermaine and Javon Shepherd and, you know, all these guys and, you know, Brady Heslop and all these guys get out there and they're making these kind of moves. It's awesome. I think it's awesome for our game. And I think, you know, one day whenever I do, you know, move on from this role, we'll be better for it. You know, we'll have more people, you know, in the pipeline, not just the players, right? Because our pipeline is pretty full now. Like, it's, and we're still filling it. We got more work to do, but it's also good to know that you have also other people that can jump in, you know, when the time comes, hopefully, and help the country in whatever way is needed down the line. So, man, I think it's good. I think it's good for basketball in our country.
When the documentary is done about this four-year period, one of the pivotal plot lines will be your decision to hire Jordy as the head coach. Walk me through that decision, and was there a moment where you felt, all right, I made the right one?
You know, these kinds of decisions are always challenging, right? Like, you know, I can remember, you know, when I hired Nick, you know, when we decided to make this decision with Nick, and, you know, the Raptors had not won the championship by the time we knew we wanted to go with Nick. And, you know, the thought was like, what if they don't win? You know, is Canada going to look at him as the coach that couldn't get it done? And is he going to start his tenure with us, you know, as the coach who couldn't get it done with the best team maybe the Raptors ever put on the floor? And so there was risk in taking that. And obviously Nick did a great job, I think, for us. And so, you know, here we come with hiring Jordy. And, you know, once again, you know, he's you know, he's not Canadian. There's going to be people that say he's not Canadian, you know. You know, what about the other coaches that you already have in your pipeline? And you know, does he really know our players? Does he have any relationships with any of them? I mean, there's going to always be some things. Like I said, I don't pay too much attention. I'm not on social. Like, I just don't. But I can imagine those thoughts. But I think somewhere, sometimes in your leadership, you have to take the information and, you know, you seek advice. A wise man has many advisors. I seek to be wise. I don't know wise I am, but I definitely seek to be wise. And so, you know, you have many advisors. And at some point, you have to trust your gut, you know, and make a decision. And we believed that this coach, with his understanding of the FIBA game, the styles of play of the other teams, having coached against some of the same coaches we're going to coach against, having been in the coaching staff of Spain, a world number one, you know, particularly in the staff of the head coach who's still coaching, and having coached some of those players that we were going to play against, it just made a lot of sense to me, you know, not to mention the fact that he has a tremendous track record in his interrelationships with NBA players, having been in the NBA for many, many years. And from what I could see, this was just a head coach in waiting who just hadn't, you know, had the opportunity yet to be there, but I believe could get the job done. And I felt our culture could manage this move. And I also think that we have a number of staff that would be supporting him that have been in the continuity, working with these same players, that could help maybe fill in some of the holes that he might have. And you know what? It's worked well so far.
I know for a fact your wife enjoyed the World Championships more than you did, because she got to be there as a mom and a fan and a proud Canadian. You were there for business and pleasure.
Yes.
But take off the GM hat for a second. Sure. And when we've had conversations about that being a dream and a goal for RJ to be like his dad and putting it on the wall in your house,
mm-hmm.
for him to go get it, literally go get it.
Yes.
What was that like for you to experience?
Yeah, you know, hugging him on the floor, you know, after accomplishing the task, you know, that's a memory I'm not going to forget. You know, somebody took a picture, you know, of it and sent it to me as well. I'm not going to forget that moment, you know. I've said it before, you know, when your children make goals for themselves, you know, and then they go out and they achieve them. Sometimes there's no prouder feeling, you know, that you can have as a parent, right? Because they're doing something meaningful. They're working at it with all their heart, you know, and they are actually impacting the community while they're doing it. I mean, that's an amazing, amazing feeling. Now, you know, there was that side of it, which is great. And obviously mom was there to watch them and hug them and do all that stuff. And, you know, especially these guys that play in the NBA, you know, like there's a lot of pressure playing in the NBA and you're getting paid. When you come to the national team, they're not getting paid, right? We are receiving millions of dollars of free labor is actually what's happening. And it's a moment for them where it's not about the contracts. It's not about all that other stuff. It's about me and my countrymen out here for the flag. You are not going to trample on our flag. Let's go. And to also see your son, you know, grab the flag and say, let's go. I mean, this is a powerful thing. You know, it's a very, very powerful thing. Now, the issue I have, right, is that, you know, he wants more room to be made on that wall at home for his jersey, right? And I think he had some talk about putting my jersey down and elevating his. I said, nah, it's still my house. That's not happening. But we'll make some room on the wall, obviously, for his jersey. But I'm very, very happy and elated as a father, for sure.
The beautiful thing about this team and why I hope many Canadians fall in love with their story, with your story as a player and an executive for it, is there's multiple flags. It's a team of first and second generation Canadians whose families came from elsewhere. They came together, did something pretty cool mm-hmm. for this country. If you were to talk to many similar Canadians about the ride that you've been on with the program,
mm-hmm.
about the ride these individual players and their families have been mm-hmm. on in this country, what would you say to them about the importance of that symbolization of what we can be as a country, but the realization based off of what they did on the floor?
Well, I think that we live in a unique country. You know, obviously my heritage, my parents were from Jamaica, out of many, one people. And and I feel that way here. You know, I feel that there are many people in this country. And one of the things I love about our country is that it has room, right? It has room for you, right? Regardless of where you come from, you know, the arms are open. And what I love about sport is that sport is it's a great equalizer, you know? Like, when you get behind those lines, it doesn't matter, you know, where you come from. Like, we all have to have, in the end, the same goal, right? The same drive, the same love for one another, the same togetherness. And the fact that you can get that from, you know, people that have heritages, you know, that are different, and that they can all come together for this one goal under one flag, I think is amazing. You know, I've lived in many different countries, you know, and being in Canada and being able to express yourself, you know, regardless of where you come from, I think is amazing, you know, And I think it's a benefit to living here, and one I think that we all kind of share in and are better for. And I think that, you know, I think I'm also very, very proud that we are in a sport and in a federation that really believes in diversity, right? Equity, you know, inclusion. They're not just catchphrases, you know, for us. There's actual real work being done. You know, we have a diversity council, you know, that's been created that I chair, that have people from within our sporting world, you know, not just within Canada Basketball, but outside within our sporting world, that are there supporting that, helping the organization as we have delved, you know, deeply into this, to try to create Canada Basketball as a place that's more equitable, more inclusive, you know, more diverse. And we're achieving it, you know. And I think a leader like Michael Bartlett and Glenn Grunwald before him are people that thought this was important, because it doesn't happen if the leader in the organization, you know, doesn't think it's important. And so I think the things that you're seeing on the court are also happening within our offices, and they're happening on our board. And so personally, after being with Canada Basketball for all these years, I don't know if I've ever been prouder to be a part of our organization than I am now, right? Seeing how important all people are within our federation.
Well, as you know, we're having an examination as a country of our national sports organizations. Lack of diverse leadership is one of the critical issues. Hopefully, what you've done both on the floor, but also within the sport, is an example of why some diverse leadership is really, really important. So keep on winning, because when you win, we all win. Thank you. Congrats.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. And listen, I love when our Canadians are doing things on a big stage like Rowan has, but I also love when our Canadians represent our values of being humble, being hardworking and dedicated, showing the grit that we like to think we have as a country, but also enjoying their work when they do it. Andre, Pierce, and Rowan embody that, which is why they're successful, which is why we all should take not only pride, but inspiration in their success. Hopefully you got that from them based off of our conversations on this episode. Thank you for listening to this episode. On behalf of myself and Sho, who kindly puts them together, we appreciate the fact that you listened to the end. If you like it that much, then feel free to like, favorite, share, subscribe, and give 5 stars, because who gives 4? Thanks for listening.